the story of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, because we know a lot about Bhaktivinoda Thakur thanks to biographies, etc. Gadadhara Pandit is said to be an incarnation of Radharani, one of the Panchatattva, Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhara. Lifelong friend of Lord Chaitanya. So because we have this biography by His Grace Rupa Vilas Das, Seventh Goswami, so it has a lot of details about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's interesting life. We can go through this a little bit. So he was born on the 2nd of September 1938 in the village of Birunagar. It's called Olu or Olugram also. It's not far from here. If you go to Krishnanagar on the way to Calcutta, you don't go on the main road, you turn off on the old trunk road and it goes through Birunagar up to Shantipur. There's his house, is still there. You can still see his house there. The devotees are living there. So he came from a distinguished family, had a very checkered life, because he came from a wealthy family, both sides, his mother and his father, they were quite wealthy. And this was a time of the British East Indian Steam Company just rising into power. They came as a business and gradually they took over India. So this was during this time. And the British had come in, established themselves, and they just defeated the last of the Muslim ruler, Shah Alam, in Delhi. So his grandfather on his mother's side was really rich. He was like a millionaire. And he said in the house they had hundreds of servants. He was a big landowner. And he said, he was the third son of his father. He said, I was a little ugly. And of all the brothers. And the mother said, anyway, let him be the servant of the others, but just let him live a long time. So, then he went to school. There in the village there, and the teacher was very cruel, foreboding. He says, I can even remember, Bhaktivinoda says, I can even remember at that time, 3 or 4 years old, he started his school. He used to show them a cane, and they used to observe the Durga Pujas with great pomp. From his mother's side, they were mostly Shaktas and worship Devi and Shiva. But they would have all these gorgeous puja festivals. All everyone would be dressed up, there would be lots of security will dress up in fancy turbans. Everyone would wear their best clothes. They would bring in other bodyguards from Shantipur, which is quite nearby. No, not nearby. Yeah, Shantipur. Quite nearby. And there was a lot of celebrations, fireworks, and poetical readings of different epics like that. And there will be 20, 30 brahmanas doing all the pujas. They would sacrifice many boats and goats and buffaloes. He said otherwise, everyone was happy at that festival except the goats and buffaloes. It was a very happy time. Then they used to observe the Dol festival, Dol Yatra, this holy festival, throwing colors. Big festivals they used to have. So when he was five, he went to this school. The teacher was very cruel. He used to have a system of punishment, whereas the older students would brutalize the younger students. And they had a rule there. The first one to school in the morning, he gets one whack, one slap. The second one gets two slaps. Third one gets three slaps, like that. The older boys used to administer. So you didn't want to be late for the... No. So he said, we used to see our teacher as a personification of Yama and death. Then they used to have to bring something for the teacher. So one day, Bhaktivinoda's name was Karunath, he bought a jackfruit from his house. Then his mother said, well, the jackfruit is gone. Where's the jackfruit? Then he told her, the teacher. So then he told the teacher. The teacher became very afraid. No, no, don't take big things. Just bring little things. He says, everyone used to have to bring him something, handful of dal or some thing. Or some, they would steal tobacco from their fathers, give him. And Bhaktivinoda's elder brother, Haridas, he became so angry one time that he picked up a machete, his knife, and he went to the teacher's room. The teacher saw him coming and fled. He never came back again. So they got a new teacher, and that was the end of that teacher. He wasn't. His brothers were very naughty. He wasn't naughty. His brothers were really naughty, and he often wouldn't go out to play with them because they'd always get into trouble. But he would sit and talk to the gatekeepers and the guards, and they used to tell him stories of Ramayan and things like that. He used to share their chapatis with him sometimes. So he liked to hear these religious stories. And sometimes he used to wake up at night and talk to the night guards. He said, especially one, called Officer Nath. He was very old, but he used to carry his lantern, a stick, a club, and a sword in his rounds. He said, he was one of the trusted guards of his grandfather. He was fearless, and he used to be a dacoit. He used to be a robber. and it accidentally, when they're doing a raid, he cut off the head of his own guru. And since that time, he just constantly chanted the holy names after that. Back then, I used to like to hear him talk, because he was always chanting. You know, he would talk some spiritual things to him. They used to have on festival days, they used to have elephants and buffaloes fighting each other. They used to tip the horns of the buffalo with metal and the tusks of the elephant with metal. And everyone would go on the veranda, balcony, and watch down, and they would get these buffaloes and elephants to fight. And sometimes the elephant would win and sometimes the buffalo would win. And they had their own elephants. Bhaktivinoda and his brothers used to ride around on their personal elephants. So very opulent. He said it was a very happy place. He was so wealthy, anyone who was in need would come to him and he would give them. He said no one lacked anything there. Hardly a day passed without some festival taking those place. He said there were 1400 good Brahmin families there, and many Kayastha and Vaidya families, it means rich merchants and doctors, etc. No one in the village went without food. Everyone was cheerful. People used to make music, sing, tell entertaining stories. He said you could not count how many jolly, fat-bellied brahmanas they were. And everyone had a good wit. They could speak sweetly and was skilled in making judgments. They were skilled in the fine arts of song and music. The groups of people could be heard at all time making music and singing, playing dice and chess. And if anyone was in need, they'd just go to the house and he would help them out of their difficulties. Medicine, oil and ghee were plentiful. I didn't have to go out to look for a job. He said, what a happy time that was there. Then when he was 7, the king of Kushinaga established the college and he invited all the prominent zamindars and kings to send their children to that school, the prestigious school. So they went there. Someone who lived next door to where they were staying, Krishnaga, he was about to leave his body, so he arranged for the Mahabharata to be read every day. So Bhaktivinoda used to go there and hear that every day about the Mahabharata. He liked that, especially the stories about Bhima. Bhima. And then they would on the weekend, then they go back by palanquin. Their bearers would come and carry the boys in palanquin back to Birunaga. It's quite a long way. About probably an hour by car. No, half an hour. Quite a long way. You carry them the palanquin. There was a British school. There was English teachers there, and Bhaktivinoda was very good. They all, even the foreign teachers, praised him very nicely. And Bhaktivinoda's father stopped him being praised in front of others; otherwise, he would get proud. But he didn't like that very much. But you know, he liked that. But he kind of went away from school. He used to hide in the forest, though, pretend he was ill. Then one day they ate some impure food. Someone relative gave them some food which was impure, and they got very sick. So they called a doctor. He said it was very serious, so they sent them back home by palanquin. And so an hour after arriving home, the brother died. Then they set up another school in Birnaga. So then he stayed there. Then his maternal uncle died. Then after that, many auspicious things began to happen to his maternal grandfather, and they became, the fortune went away. Just so Lakshmi's chanchal, you know, she actually doesn't stay in one place. And the fortune just gradually disappeared. Numerous expenses came, swindlers came, took advantage of his generosity, and eventually he fell into debt. All his sons died. Then the elephant died, and then they had to sell the horse, and Dajji had to they became destitute, and then both sides. He used to cease to visit one tantric also, Bhaktivinoda, who lived nearby. And he had these cups made of skulls, which he used to hide in his room. And some people said if you gave Ganges water and milk to the skull, the skull would smile. Hare Krishna. But Bhaktivinoda tried to see that, but he said he can never see it. Yeah, so then the fortune was got this. By 9 years old, all the fortune of the families were going. They had some a lot of the property was lost and mortgage. His father tried to help by securing property for his father in Calcutta, but the father refused to accept it because he had property in Orissa. Staying there. Anyway, so many bad things came. Unfortunate things here. And Bhaktivinoda, then the father died. So Bhaktivinoda began to question, you know, life. You know, before he was very happy as a child, but then all these difficulties came up. Upon him. You know, by his 11, his father died, two of his brothers died, which left him and his sister. Then when he was 12, his mother arranged a marriage for him with a 5-year-old girl. So they were married, and generally wouldn't, until they reached puberty, they wouldn't live together. He said a grand wedding was held. He said it was like a doll's marriage. There was a pleasure boat, a wedding palanquin, decoration, lights, English music, etc. Drinking Ganges water and milk. Many gentlemen came dressed in bright clothes and turbans and jari outfits. Big one. So then later he was going to live in the house of his, you know, of his father-in-law. But they said he's not allowed to stay alone there because of his young age. So then his nanny, his nurse came with him and cared for him. Then later, then his grandfather died. Then Bhaktivinoda, their family went to Calcutta. But he said, Calcutta was a fearful place. Immediately upon arriving, my nose was assailed by a severe foul smell. In other words, the city stunk. and he became very, very sick. Well, the stench took away my appetite. At least at that place where he was. But he didn't like it. And he went to Kali Ghat, where Kali is worshipped. He was a little disgusted there. So then he said, I didn't like anything in Calcutta. So then they went back to Ulugram. And he was trying to manage the estate at such a young age. But he wasn't very good at that. Everyone thought his mother had a lot of money, but actually she didn't. Various things, problems came up, and they had to keep on paying these expenses. Then when he was 14, he went to one very famous Bengali poet, Kashi Prasad Ghosh, and many people came to be trained in English composition, etc. And he tested the writing of Bhaktivinoda and was very impressed with intelligence and gave him a little prize, a mirror. And he wanted to go to Calcutta to pursue his education. So they got to Calcutta after the puja, I mean Durga Puja season. And he lived there in a big house on the bank of the river. There was a homes of the missionaries, the Church of Krishna, Bandel Queen's College and Bethune School. It was a beautiful and aristocratic section of Calcutta. And he enrolled in the Hindi Charitable Institute School. He studied there for 4 years, constantly reading and studying literature with Ishwara Chandra Nandi, in whom he had great faith. He described that gentleman as truthful, in control of his senses, religious, knowledgeable in Shastra, and well-spoken. So say the British were interested in creating a generation of Indians whose native ways could be transformed by education. In a famous education brief written in 1835, Thomas Macaulay put forward his argument succinctly, if arrogantly. To sum up what I have said, I think it is clear that if we are free to employ our funds as we choose, that we ought to employ them in teaching what is best worth knowing. That English is better worth knowing than Sanskrit or Arabic. That the natives are desirous to be taught English and are not desirous to be taught Sanskrit or Arabic, and neither the languages of law nor the language of religion have Sanskrit and Arabic. Any peculiar claim to our encouragement? That is possible to make a native of this country thoroughly good English scholars, then to that end our efforts ought to be directed. In other words, he was saying we must form a class of Indian in blood and color, but English in taste and opinions, in morals and intellect. Because there wasn't many British here. Prabhupada said the British, they took over India without firing a shot. So they couldn't manage everything themselves, so they wanted to train the locals up. They wanted to Anglicize. They wanted to Britishize the Indians. So then they wanted to educate them in their ways, their philosophies, and their so this is what they did. Then they undermined all the Sanskrit, the Arabic, because the Muslims were controlling before the British. They introducing their languages. But and many Indians, they took advantage of this policy, but it's ultimately to become one of the major factors in the undoing of the British Raj, as the very intellectuals produced by the British education were later to establish an independent movement that drove the British from India. That was Subhas Chandra Bose. So he won the first examination. He won first prize. But then he got very sick. Bhaktivinoda suffered a lot with his health, a lot, as his other things. So then he's doing his college, and he's now starting to write. He's making poems, and he's being recognized as a very good debater. He was living separate. His grandma. His grandmother died. His wife wanted to live with him in Calcutta. She was 12 years old at that time. But he had to get a good job before he should come. So he had various jobs around. He went to Orissa. He became a deputy magistrate. He began writing a lot. Many, many books. He wrote over 100 books. He said. And then Arisi, he got charge of the magistrate for the Jagannath temple. The British Raj had great faith in Bhaktivinoda Thakur as a very dedicated person, very honest, very religious, and very, very learned. So he could deal with the pandas and everyone. Any religious thing that they would call him, he would resolve. And he studied all the religions. Bhaktivinoda Thakur liked Christianity because Jesus was teaching love of God. Then because there was another class of people who were the intellectuals there. Calcutta was the capital city at that time of India. And all the intellectual Indians, they were thought it would, you know, be cool to be, you know, Britishized, and they started a new religion, Ram Mohan Roy. They called it the Brahmos. It was like it was like impersonalism and Christianity mixed together, because the Western foreigners, they couldn't hack the personal form of the Lord very well. So then he made this kind of mishmash of Christianity, and it was a little popular, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur didn't go for it, and nor did the Orthodox Hindus. In fact, there was a big argument, a big debate, so they called Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But he said, I'm not a Brahmos. I can't speak for you, because they thought he was like, you know, a Britishized Indian, important person, magistrate. But he did speak or write something at that lecture where he chastised both of them, the Hindus and the Brahmas, for being, sectarian, just seeing their own view and nothing else, and the Brahmas as being a mixture and not parampara, not coming from Veda Vyas, etc. So, and a lot of people followed him. So he was getting very well known as a very trusted servant for the government and very popular amongst the religious people. And then he was called to stop this Bhishakishan, that person who was imposter, said he was a avatar of Vishnu. But he was, and some village people were going to him, and he was misbehaving. And some of them complained, some of the cultured ones complained about to the government. So Bhaktivinoda had to go there to stay. But he was very popular, and eventually, and he had some mystic power. Eventually, Bhaktivinoda went there to arrest him, and he said, "How can you arrest me?" But he had about 40 policemen with him. He said, I'm gonna come anyway. I'll come with you, he said, because you're my bhakta. Whatever my bhakta says, I will do that. That is talking as Vishnu, because you're my bhakta, I'm coming. And Bhaktivinoda preached to him all the way, but he wouldn't listen. Anyway, eventually he was sentenced to jail. It was very intense. There was 1,000 people outside the court. This is an incarnation. Yeah, there'll be a horrific reaction for this. You better let him go. he cursed back. You go to your house, see what's happening. His son was really sick. Then on the last day of the judgment, he said, "This is your last day, Bhaktivinoda." And the day before the judgment, Bhaktivinoda got really sick. He had to be carried to the court. But he pronounced a sentence. You have to go to prison. And as he was leaving, there was also many, many people, 1,000 people outside, and it was quite dangerous. But then one of the, I think it was a medical officer there, he knew from the British, he knew that the yogis, they keep their shakti in their jat, in their dreadlocks. So on his way out, he rushed up and grabbed him and cut his dreadlocks off. And then he fainted on the floor. He fell over without, like, powerless. And then his disciples said, "Hey, what kind of God is this?" But even during the whole trial period, he never ate or drank anything. And there, all the guards the guards wouldn't go there, so they had to have Muslims. The Hindus wouldn't go there because they was afraid that it may have been an incarnation. And eventually, he took his own life in the prison before his time was up. And he arrested some other people also who were his cohorts. Huh? Brahma and Shiva, yeah. And another one, there was another Balaram also. He had to chastise him. Then in Puri, while he was a magistrate there, he formed a society of devotees called Bhagavat Samsat, which they held meetings in the Jagannath Ballabh Gardens for discussing the topics of Krishna that was Jagannath Vallabh Gardens is where Sri Damodar's house is. On the main road. Sri Damodar's house? I think. Is it Sri Damodar's house? The Jagannath Vallabh Gardens, where Mahaprabhu used to take rest during Rath Yatra. Did Sarup Damodar live there? Sarup Damodar Goswami? Ramananda Rai, sir. Yes, Ramananda Rai. Yes, 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 yes. So many people came, but one Babaji wouldn't come there. He misunderstood, and also Bhaktivinoda Thakur wasn't wearing tilak or kunti mala, so he refused to come. Although he was very popular, big devotee, he didn't consider Bhaktivinoda to be a real devotee. And he criticized him, and then he got very sick. And then when he was sick, Jagannath came in his dream, told him he made a mistake. you're going to lose your body unless you go back and surrender to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So you have to go and pray for his mercy. So then he came back and went to Bhaktivinoda Thakur and beg forgiveness. He said, because, you know, I disrespected you because you don't wear tilak or kunti, and please forgive me. And Bhaktivinoda said, what's my crime? He said, the Vaishnav tilak and tulsi, they're given by the Diksha Guru. He said, I don't have a Diksha Guru. Mahaprabhu has not sent me a Diksha Guru as yet. I therefore just chant the holy name on tulsi beads. In that situation, would it be good to whimsically wear tilak or neck beads? And the Bhaktivinoda Thakur said he was actually a siddha, purusha, this lover. And he showed mercy to me, and I became his follower. And then Bhaktivinoda arranged some good medicine someday. He became cured. Then while he was in charge of the temple, there was a lot of money being misappropriated by the king, and Bhaktivinoda heard about this, and he found out that the king was actually was up in the money. So then he punished him. He said, you have to cook chapan bhog. You have to cook chapan bhog every day. You have to support the chapan bhog for Jagannath, 56 items. So that's expensive, you know. His treasury was becoming depleted. So he'd been very angry. And but Bhaktivinoda was there. He had the full power of a magistrate. Plus, he was deputed to be the specific responsibility for the temple. So he was so popular. The Raja couldn't have him killed because he was a very prominent man. So he decided that we'll kill him with a fire sacrifice. So inside the room inside the palace, they began this yajna, fire sacrifice, to kill Bhaktivinoda Thakur. For 1 month they did this yajna. And when the last oblation was put into the fire, Svaha or Ghee, to kill Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the king's only son died. Hare Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the king and other persons, they used to commit many illegal acts. I would go there and prevent all such things, and I made enemies of the king and the king's men. But because I was helped by Lord Jagannath, no one was able to harm me. Then after 5 years in service, then he left Puri, and he was posted at different places in Bengal. And he began to write many books this time, Krishna Samhita, so many books. Then he met from, Bhaktivinoda was feeling that he should take initiation. Then there was one, Vipin Bihari Goswami, who Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to hear from. So he came and gave him the diksha. They're coming in the line of Nityananda Vamsi. He doesn't say. Because he got those other names from by his writings. He was awarded different titles from his writings, from when he wrote certain things. There was they awarded him the title of Bhakti, you know, they awarded him the title of Sachit Ananda. As after Diksha, yeah. But Diksha, it doesn't say he's got changed his name. Didn't say that here. And the government, they were onto offering many awards, titles, but he always refused. He said that won't help my spiritual life. He said rather it will diminish this titles for material titles thing. Then he went to Vrindavan. He got rid of some dacoits that were disturbing everyone in Vrindavan. They used to rob all the pilgrims. He cleaned that place up, made it peaceful. He then he went to Sri Rampur, where he lived. It's not near Calcutta. Then his mother died that time. Then he went to Gaya to do Shraddha ceremony. And while in Sri Rampur, he got the opportunity to visit the former residence of Lord Nityananda's great associates, Udaran Datta Thakur, and Abhiram Thakur's place. Then he organized a press in Calcutta. He had a house called Bhakti Bhavan, Chaitanya Press. Then he wanted to come to Krishnanagar. He wanted to retire. The government were very reluctant to let him retire. Actually, everyone was applying to get him in their district, the different district officers, magistrates, things like that, and they wanted him. He was very popular. They wanted to come to their district, and then he wanted to retire. The government refused, so he said, "Let me be stationed at Krishnanagar." So he came to see the magistrate at Krishnanagar and spoke to him, asked if he would let him have his swap posts or something like that. So then he came. He came back down to Nadia. There he wrote books. He wrote books in English. He started to write books in English, sending to the Western world. He he bought a house in Surupganj, Sahabganj. So he had that house. He had that house there when he used to commute to Krishnanagar to the office, and he was very efficient. And he's, because he was a magistrate, he was dealing with cases. He would finish a case in 5 minutes. He would do like 30, 40 cases in the morning or something, however many it was. Surprised all the other, because they would spend, you know, hours just to do a few. They thought he must be taking bribes. But he was very strict. Where he would hear the case, he would make a decision, boom, that was it. He would stick to it. He wouldn't change. But on reading his the other magistrates used to read his judgments and conclusions, and they found they were very actually sound and well grounded decisions that he would make. But they was amazed at his potency, his power. He could do everything so much. They even had him. They even suspected he was taking bribes, and they had him watched. But then they found what a kind of great austere life he used to lead. He used to go to bed about 7:30, get up 10 or 11, 12, and then he would be 7:30 to 10. That was his sleep. Then he would write for 6 hours, like Prabhupada, and the same, following the same footsteps. He would write, he would chant, take some milk and chapati, answer correspondence, go to the office, Krishnanagar, come back at for lunch, go back again. So then they realize he's very, very great devotee. When he was in Navadvip, they were staying at the Dharamshala, Rani Dharamshala, and on the veranda, it was a dark night and it was cloudy, and then looking over to Mayapur, then he saw this, he said, very effulgent mansion, building, and his son, was it Bhagavanta Lalit Prasad, his son Lalit Prasad, he could see it also. Another servant or clerk was with him. He couldn't see anything, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur wasn't convinced that the birthplace of Mahaprabhu was where they said it was. That was on the west side of the Ganges, because when Mahaprabhu took sannyas, he left his home, he crossed the Ganges to go to Katwa. The Katwa is on the east side. So he knew the birthplace couldn't be on the east side, it must be over here somewhere. And with the help of old maps and talking to the old people, and when he saw this, and he saw there was one palm tree there, tall tree. So in the morning they went there, and Balal Digi, that was from Balal Sen, King Balal Sen used to live there, that place was named after him. Digi means pond. And then speaking to the elders, they said, this is the birthplace of Mahaprabhu. They showed him one mound, raised land, they said, this is actually the birthplace of Mahaprabhu. And then he got some old maps, which actually indicate that had the name Mayapura. So then he was convinced that was it. This was Mayapura. This was the birthplace. So then he bought Jagannath Das Babaji, who Jagannath gave him. He accepted Jagannath as his guru. Jagannath liked to listen to him. Jagannath was the most prominent Vaishnava here. He used to spend 6 months here, 6 months in Vrindavan. And he was, at that time, he was 120 years old. He was carried around in a basket. They took him over for confirmation, and then on arriving there, then he began to jump, leap in the air. This is Nimai's birthplace. Eta Nimai Janmasthan. This is Nimai Janmasthan. This is Nimai's birthplace. And so eventually, after some time, after probably some years, then they established the temple there with Garanga and Vishnupriya. And while they were constructing that temple, they found a deity of Adokshaya Vishnu, which was, according to records, Jagannath Mishra used to worship. So that was a second, you know, another evidence that that was actually the birthplace. And then many of the learned brahmanas, they gradually in Navadvip, they began to accept that this was actually the place. And a huge temple installation, Bhaktivinoda used to go and beg personally, house to house, to raise money for that temple. And the huge people came from all over India, Vaishnavas, many prominent people, to establish that temple. It's not the same one as there now. And it was, it said there was Gauranga and Vishnupriya. Now there's Vishnupriya is also there. Another deity is also Panchatattva, etc. But the Adokshaya deity is there. It's a little relief, small black relief. That is still there. So that is his great Nibhita Namo. Bhakti Vinodaya Sachidana Noni Gaur Shakti Surupayaru Panudavaya. That he is the incarnation of the energy, the Shakti of Lord Chaitanya, who predicted that, you know, his name will be sung in every town and village. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his songs and poems, he expressed that. He's predicting, because Mahaprabhu said that, he's predicting, when will the foreigners come? When will the Russians, French, the English, the Americans, come here to the Navadvip, Mayapur, and raise their hands with their Bengali brothers and chant Hari, the name of Krishna, Gauranga. So that was a prediction, and at that time that was a very bold thing to do because of the situation. The British were trying to undermine the whole Vedic culture. Everyone was, then the Mayavadi factor was there. Then you got these other things like the Brahmos, and everything was Kijari, and the Sampradayas, the Asampradayas. When Mahaprabhu left his pastimes, then a lot of people left Navadvip. They didn't want to be here because everything reminded them of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in the feeling of separation of Mahaprabhu, they mostly lived solitary lives after that. So the preaching went down. And then these other Asampradayas came up. These mixtures came up, and that they, under the influence of one North Indian publisher, began to publish these Sahajiya works, and they were popular. So they were printed a lot of those. So that was everyone thought that was the mainstream, you know, Mahaprabhu's teachings. But actually, it was completely different from what Mahaprabhu's true teachings, and very abominable activities in some of those Asampradayas. So that was a situation. Nobody cared for the Vaishnavas, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. They looked like, you know, beggars and debauchees. So even the strict Hindus were against. So the British, the ruling thing, they was against. They was demising everything. And their whole intellectual thing in Calcutta, where they were trying to become, you know, half British and follow their ways. So at that time, it was practically unthinkable that this Gaudiya Vaishnava would, you know, go to other kind of foreigners would actually take the Gaudiya Vaishnavism against all odds. But Bhaktivinoda said, this is Mahaprabhu's prediction. So he was praying, when will that day come? When will that become? When will we see that? So now, by the mercy of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Prabhupada said, he practically, single-handedly revived the Krishna consciousness movement. Then it was expounded by his son, and then now we've, by the potency of Bhakti Siddhanta, you know, they've empowered us to, you know, take it to the West, and it's a fulfillment of the desire. So, but it was at that time, so we can understand, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was not an ordinary living entity. Actually, he's said to be Gunamanjari, Anangamanjari, Bhaktivinoda, Kamala Manjari, which is revealed himself. Unusually, people don't do that. It's a very, very special soul in our line, that he's the inaugurator practically of the, what we know as a Krishna consciousness movement. And the rest, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai. So he left his body in Calcutta, and they actually burnt the body, his relatives. So then he brought the body to here, Saravi Kunj, and made the samadhi there. There, such a non Bhaktivinoda Thakur Masai ki jai. Gopari ki jai. Sai Go Premanandi. Hari Hari Go. Hari Krishna. Want to add? There'll be tons of stuff. Where? Hare Krishna. So you'll go to Vrindavan, but right now you have some work to do in Navadvip. When he was doing his bhajan, then he would feign paralysis or blindness, or when people came, because he didn't want to be disturbed, just doing his bhajan. Right. We got that from Gorky Shodas, Babaji. Interesting story. He translated and gave commentaries on other many Vaishnavas also that we never heard of. Pure devotees, you know, not the prominent names in anymore, but found their works, and he would translate them and make commentary also, as well as on standard ones like Chaitanya Charitamrita. It took him how many? 7 years or so to find a Chaitanya Charitamrita. When he said, first time I read it, I was convinced that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Lord, so was non-different tradition. Second time I read it, he said I had doubts why Mahaprabhu was teaching the highest principle. Was this erotic principle of Krishna and the gopis. And Mahaprabhu was teaching this as the highest or the most esoteric part of spirituality. But I couldn't digest that. But on the third reading, then he became a bhakta and a pure follower of Mahaprabhu. He was completely convinced. I forgot the actual order. It took him three times he read it. Then he was completely convinced. Jai Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai. Radha Pandit ki jai. Gopal ki jai. Gopal Nandi ki jai.